welcome to the inaugural episode of Read Between the Lines. And I am thrilled to death to have my first guest be my wife and my business partner, Shauna Reed. We're the owners of Impluent. We are a corporate consulting firm that specializes in executive coaching, high-performance leadership consulting, and workforce optimization, which is the portion of our company that my wife, Shauna, oversees. I'm going to have Shauna tell you a little bit about her background, and then we'll jump right in on a discussion about the world of work and what we see in the marketplace. Shauna?
Okay. Thank you, Robin. Thank you for having me as your first guest. I was actually surprised to get the honor, right? But happy to join and just give a little bit of my background. So was in the corporate world for longer than I want to admit, but for about 20 years before we started our business, I was actually in the benefits consulting space and did find that I became really valuable to the market and in what I was doing. So I stayed in that for a long time. But every time I would leave one place to another, I realized that there was a reason why I'd leave. And once you're in that space, you're always going to a competitor. So it made me wonder, since the widget wasn't necessarily what I was passionate about, it was the people I got to work with, but what made me leave one place that I was so excited about to go to another, which got me and Robin talking about how we could use our collective skills, and mine being so specific, still had a very tight relationship with human resources leadership and obviously just executive leadership, since benefits is pretty important. But again, found that there was just something I could bring to the table with my experience as an employee, as well as somebody who understood the challenges from within. And that is how my part of what we did came to be several years ago.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I am Robin Reed. My background is in entrepreneurship. I love to start, run, sell, merge companies. I've done it for the better part of 40 years. When I'm not in that industry, as we are now, I tend to fall into the financial services industry. I have the dubious distinction of having been a stockbroker on Black Monday back in the 1980s. And that's what actually helped me get into the executive coaching space. Even though I was very young, I knew my craft well and had become very good at working with top-level CEOs of public companies to sell their 144 restricted stock. And that just gave me an innate ability to work with executives at a level where I was able to deliver value to them that they saw, and kind of stuck with me. So I'm really excited on the executive coaching side and public speaking. Shauna oversees and does an incredible job at working with our high-performance leadership consulting, and workforce optimization. So I want to jump right in, because obviously we have seen a lot of things happen since the pandemic relative to the world of work. You know, as I've met with people, one of the things we're seeing is that employees are having far more say in what their workplace environment entails. I was speaking to someone from the International Labor Organization last week, and I shared with him that I think where the paradigm shift has come from is that it used to be employers would say, "Why should you work for my company?" And then the employee had to justify that question with a resume and a solid interview and evidence of sufficient experience. Today, I believe it's the same question, but it's the employee asking, "Why should I work for your company? Do you align with my values? What kind of organization are you?" A phrase we hear often is, you know, "What is your why?" You know, you've got to be more than a widget seller. So Shauna, tell me a little bit about what you see. You work a lot more directly with the employees and management and often leadership within organizations. What is a common thread you're seeing now versus even when you were in the corporate world?
Good question. Loaded question, because it feels like it keeps changing. I see it at all stages of how we work with a client. So from the hiring piece, like you're talking about, the conversations are much different than they used to be. In fact, I've had employers where we're really honing in on how they can keep the people they even get. So the attracting people, it's making sure you even know the type of person you need, which is obviously what we do to help them. Once we figure that out internally, that's great. But are we promoting that when we're actually trying to attract that type of candidate? You know, don't ask for the go-getter who has all kinds of great think outside the box ideas. What you really want is someone to come in, follow the book, and be quiet, because that person's going to come, the person you asked for, and then you're going to be like, why won't they stop? So that's part of it. But then we found what's the gold too is, it's so difficult to find people who are maybe even after the pandemic still in the marketplace. We know that there's just high amounts. I mean, it's in the millions of workers who just left the marketplace, the work marketplace. And they're not just retiring. I mean, these are just people who decided after the pandemic, maybe I can do something different. So once you get this person, what we're finding is, how do I make sure they stay? Because you talk about the old times. I remember when the 90-day probationary period was a thing. And it really was kind of like you said, the employer saying, is this really working? So that's why benefits would start afterwards and all the things. Now people are just saying, I'm listening to employers say, I just want them to stay for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. So what we've helped them to do, and it's starting to make a difference, is if you know what really drives the people when you bring them in, especially when you hand them off. The HR department does such a good job of doing the whole onboarding, but the onboarding continues then with the actual team they're going to be a part of and the manager. And not always do they have the insights or the experience to know how to best bring somebody on and keep them engaged from the beginning so they stay connected to their why, especially if that was part of the interview process. So to your point, we're finding that people are feeling empowered, and I'm saying of all generations, not just the more young generations. They're starting to feel like I have a choice, and if this doesn't feel like it's going to fulfill me or be what I was looking for, I'm going to get out now instead of like I used to do or my parents told me to do, which is stay for at least a few years and see how it goes. So I agree with what you're saying, and on that front end, there are things you can do, and we are helping our clients to be able to find out what those are just to make it so maybe if they really are the right fit, they stay. They don't wait till everything settles in, because you don't always have that much time these days.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. And then when you talk about employees staying, obviously reducing the attrition rate among qualified employees is critical to companies. I think that it is often overlooked that there is a hiring cost. Most companies do not break even on a hire for at least 2 years from the employee's start date. That means that if someone is making $50,000 a year and they get hired on January 1st and they leave on December 31st of the same year, that company is now technically $25,000 in the hole. Right. They still have to hire for that position. So now we have another $50,000, 2 years to recover that. So now it's $75,000. They get to this point of diminishing returns where it's just not possible to recover the cost, and they just take that on as an expense. You've become really great with our clients of showing them that employees are assets on the balance sheet, not expenses on the income statement, and showing them how to value that. Tell a little bit, well, you know, I love this one story. So we have a client that was having a problem retaining a chef. Do you mind telling that story of what we did and how we helped? We don't need to share what the company is. We try to be pretty discreet about who our clients are, but we can describe, I'll have Shauna describe the situation for you.
Sure. It was actually in the middle of the pandemic, actually, when we started working with them, and we had already agreed, they already had like a vision of what they wanted us to help them with, but they happened to mention that they had one specific position that they had had a lot of turnover, and that was their executive chef position. And just to put some context out there, they're not a restaurant. They are a resident facility. And so they did have to have on-site chef. But it was for a population that needed a special kind of connection and understanding. It was adults with developmental disabilities. So to be very specific, the needs of the chef were definitely the resume. You had to be qualified, and they had qualified people, but it wasn't working. Somehow they were just finding the turnover, and it was, like you said, costing them money. They're a nonprofit. There was a lot of things that were at stake, not to mention the pandemic adding to that. And this had been an issue I think they'd been having for about 2 years, so even before the pandemic. So they were able to use the analytics and the tools that we use, and we helped guide them to let's really look at the type of person. We know they have to be qualified on paper. The resume will be there. The interview will still happen. what kind of person do you think? And so they actually were given very objective questions that were asking things that we ask of everyone. And it really just helped them to kind of see what behavioral style. I don't want to say personality because that simplifies it too much. What drives somebody and what would make them with their unique experience a good fit? And in going through that process, they were able to identify someone that still through the interviews, the resume, all the things they needed were there, but they had that extra. And now they had that little bit of like, okay, this feels like now I can trust my gut. I'm going to go with it. That person's been there for over 3 years now. And he has managed to ingratiate himself so much with the residents. The one story that I know that you like to share is the one example of this where, you know, it's required that he keeps them on a very healthy, nutritious, and obviously sanitary diet. So like things like fruit are important. Well, instead of just doing what was required, which was maybe just, you know, using even canned fruit or doing something very simple for lunch, he actually, to bond with the residents, did something where he was able to carve animals out of actual fruit and have them be a part of it. I mean, it was just, and to talk to our client and watch her, because she has such a compassion for all of her residents. I mean, she was in tears just thinking and telling the story too, because it was like, finally, we have someone. We had plenty of qualified on paper people, but they were not the right fit. It was the culture fit was off, and it was disrupting. I think something you said, when someone leaves, it does cost money, but it actually affects the entire team. And that's something that we can't forget. And I'd love to jump into that when we're ready for it, because that's the other thing we're seeing, especially since the pandemic.
Okay, great. And I will come back to that. So to give you some perspective, as an audience, prior to us assisting this organization with what we like to call a job target, that's where we take, where we include behavioral traits that would be ideal for the person filling that position. Prior to us assisting them with that, the turnover was 90 to 180 days. No one was staying. As Shauna mentioned, the person that was hired using our methodology has been there for 3 years with no indication that they're going anywhere soon. I would also add that during the pandemic, when they were meeting as team leaders, managers, and leadership of this organization, and they wanted ideas of how we were going to work with this community that exists inside this facility, how were they going to get them through the pandemic? They had health issues that had to be addressed differently than the general population. And how are they going to address the issues relative to the pandemic and this and the residents of this organization? And it was the chef that had the most ideas, and they utilized more of his ideas than anyone else's. So again, it's the difference between someone being having the behavioral traits for the role versus the cognitive skills. We are very clear that depending on what your role is, you need to be qualified for it. That's cognitive. Behavioral is how do you process information? How do you communicate? How do you hear things? How do you say things? And this is what we work with companies to do to help with the internal communication. We often hear the term, you know, bringing your best self to work, but you need to know what your best self is. And the science and the analytics behind what we do identifies that. I think of the hundreds, if you're not at 1,000 already, but there's several hundreds of these behavioral profiles that we've done. Maybe two people have said that doesn't sound like me, but truly 99.9% say, wow, how could you know that with a 5-minute survey? But you wanted to come back to another point, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you actually continued about the chef, because you're right. He was not intended to be a part of the leadership team per se. It was just to do that one job. And one of the reasons, to your point, that it really works is because they actually had in their leadership team quite a bit of people that we would call maybe the innovators who are always thinking on their feet. They're always brainstorming in the moment, and they kind of want to take action quickly. He was kind of the opposite of that, actually the exact opposite of that. And what they found was his perspective, he needed more time to process. And when they gave him that kind of time, his perspective was so much different that it really allowed them to consider all perspectives, which really made him a great asset. So I like that you brought that up, because we like to call that a team balancer. And we do find this is where I wanted to go, which is in the team piece. One of the things that's really struck me this last year specifically is we've done a lot, as you know, a lot of team meetings with our clients where we go in and we're able to identify. We start first with each individual on the team. They do a read back with me. We do a kind of a, for the self-awareness, you need to understand yourself as an individual, what you bring, and feel comfortable with that, to your point. If I have any questions, I want to make sure I'm on board. Then we bring the team together. They really get to not only discover things about each other, because there are people in there who are, there's people who are actually been working together for a while, but they, we bring how we behave and how we're driven to behave are not always the same thing, right? So how we show up for our job may be different than how we're driven. So people get to discover some things, maybe some hidden gems about people they work with. So that's been really awesome. But here's the thing that I had happen recently, which made me come back to, the retention. I just recently with a client of ours, as you know, we had gone through an engagement survey. And so we brought in their middle management separate from their senior leaders, to be able to discuss. We start off kind of setting the table with what is engagement? Why is it important? And get their headspace there and then ask them the question. I ask them the question that's just pretty typical. Think of it the last time you were feeling really engaged, whether it was here or somewhere else, and kind of conjure that up. And then I had some people share. And the thing that struck me is we had some long timers that were at this particular place in middle management, and they were really honest. A couple of them said, you know, it was here that I was really engaged, but it was before I became a manager. And it really made us dig a little deeper into, that's what happens, right? Like sometimes to reward the people that are doing a great job in our organization, we give them a promotion, and that's great. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. But if we do it without giving them the tools, the training, and maybe a little extra attention to make sure they know how to realize their new role and what success looks like in that. Because I think middle managers get stuck in that no man's land, right? I'm not at the top. I don't get credit for if the company does well. I'm not at the bottom. I'm not the end user. I'm not necessarily getting credit for the things I used to do really well. Now my job is as a leader, in most cases, to make my team better. But what's the metric for that? How do I now redefine success for myself? And believe it or not, that might sound like a nice to have, but if we're talking about engagement and we know disengagement costs money, even before someone leaves. So when we think about that, that's been a thing that for me has been, wow. So we found some clients who have really embraced a little bit more middle management coaching, which, you know, I've been working with several of our clients on that. And if nothing else, these team meetings have let there be an opportunity where everyone stops. We get to discover each person on the team. And for a second, everyone, including the manager, gets to hear how they're perceived. And sometimes it gives them that little extra boost to go, oh, I didn't know you saw that with me, or I didn't realize that this helped you. So it's crazy how much the small things can really reconnect people, and it does save money. I mean, the company is losing money if people start to be disengaged and aren't as productive, but it also helps with that retention piece you talked about. And we got to be careful, because once we get that team really humming, one bad hire that stays even for 90 days, 120 days and leaves, everybody's reshuffling again. So to your point, it affects more than just the person or even just the attrition cost of that one individual.
Well, and you brought up something that reminds me of my days when I would do sales training, and I have trained thousands of sales professionals in my career. And it's that belief that a top salesperson would make a top sales manager. And they very rarely do, to be quite honest. They're a separate set of skills. And I've watched a lot of companies have to find a different way. And I know that, you know, you spent 20 years in the insurance industry and you work with some of the top producers in that industry and saw exactly what it looked like when they had to manage people or when they had to run an office, and how sales production dropped and customer service dropped and morale dropped. Right. So we certainly see that. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, you've talked a lot about the workforce, and just for the sake of this, we kind of separate through our communication, workforce, management, leadership, executives. And each of them has an equal value to the organization, maybe not the same value, but they each have an equal value. But with that said, you know, you've talked a lot about middle management. How important is it to have buy-in from the top when you're bringing in a company like ours or the many others that do great work out there? How important is it to have buy-in from the top?
It is the most important. I really good point, Robin, because we are finding that our highest performing clients, the ones who've made the biggest impact on their organization for the positive, it starts from the top down. So even though a lot of time, to your point, that gets spent once we get past maybe that initial, and I guess I should mention what that is, when we typically have started out with all of these organizations that I'm referring to, they chose, because they're at the top, they chose to start with their leadership team, with their executive team. And we went in, and between what you would do and I do, we went in and really were able to give them the full experience of that. And they saw immediate opportunity. They saw where this could be huge for the rest of the organization. And that's why they kept finding ways to make it happen. And we've gotten creative with some of them, if they're nonprofits and everything else, just to make sure we could find a way for them to do this. Not everyone has the budget when they start, and then they find the way. But we have so far found that the clients that do it from the top down, they keep working with us because they see it and they see new opportunities, and they just want to do, they want to capitalize on that because they care. They realize that it matters. It's making a difference, and they're hearing the buzz from the bottom up. So it starts from the top down, but then the buy-in then starts to come in from the bottom up. And that's what makes the leader go, okay, this was a good decision. And they can kind of free their mind to go think about what they need to do, which is at the top level. That's what I think I've seen the most.
Yeah, I know that you deal a lot more with the internal teams, and that's something that we've always discussed, is why it's so necessary, even when we're out prospecting for new clients, we've got to start at the top. If someone at the top of the organization doesn't A, believe there's an opportunity to be better, and B, believe that having a more cohesive group of people working for them with far greater transparency of communication, we find that that's key. You know, everyone that is disengaged doesn't necessarily want to quit, but they want to be heard. And it's interesting, as we've seen, when people are heard, even if you don't bring about change necessarily, there was value in them being heard, because employees have ideas and thoughts and opinions. And sometimes they're great and they're right and they should be addressed and utilized. And sometimes they're ideas, they're well thought out, but they don't have all the pieces to the puzzle. But to give an executive an opportunity to respond to that with, here's why this can be done, or here's why this cannot be done, or here's the cost associated with this, and it helps that person feel engaged. Remember, you know, at the time that companies hire people, you thought that was the best person for the job. Why in the world would you let them start work and then treat them differently than that? Because they thought you were the best company and you thought they were the best person. And sometimes you get inside a company and that all kind of breaks down, and people get into the, well, you know, this is how we do things. But the better companies that I'm seeing across the board, industry agnostic, are the ones that are constantly listening, watching, learning, looking for new ways to do old things. As we're seeing today, you know, just in the last 90 days, the difference in how people talk about generative AI, it was fear-based at the beginning 90 days ago, and more companies that I engage with are saying, no, we need to actually implement it. It needs to be part of our process. It is the now. It's not even the future anymore. And it tells you 90 days ago it was the future. 90 days later, it's the now. And so we're seeing that companies are learning to adapt and adopt. So let's talk a little bit about the hot button issue that has been a hot button issue since, I would say, the end of 2021. Work from home. You know, we find so many companies, and you and I have had people we've spoken with who've said very clearly, I want all my employees to come into the office because it makes me feel better. There's no other business reason for it. It just makes them feel better. Now, there are other companies that have given really solid reasons for that. But what have you seen? Because it's not universal. We don't think that every company should have remote employees. We don't think every company should have hybrid. And we don't think every company should have all of their employees in the office. What are some of the things you've experienced? What's some of the feedback you've heard from companies as they try to address that issue? Because some of our clients do ask us for our professional opinion on how to handle some of these things.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. And it did keep evolving. I feel... I know you and I experienced speaking with a CEO here locally who they had a really nice big office space on Tempe Town Lake. And when he shared with us, this was actually at the end of 2021, I believe. And when he shared with us that they had been doing all these things to get employees back in the office, and it did, lunch didn't really matter, right? There's a few of them. But what they found was even their executive team, there's some members that were like, I don't really want to come back in the office. They're like, well, if we can't get you in the office, I don't know how we're going to get your employees back. So we've seen everything from people kind of almost bribing and then, you know, some drawing, like you said, a line in the sand. One of the most interesting ones, I think, that we spoke with at the end of last year was one out of Los Angeles who they actually had a lot of younger generation in there, had always been pretty flexible out of the LA area, pretty flexible about where to work from. But they actually found that in the specific industry where they are, there were people of younger generations missing opportunities in just hearing and seeing colleagues on a day-to-day basis where they'd be learning through things that weren't necessarily as tangible as you would think. So they actually created something. But I like my point of this is they made a communication that said, starting in 2023, we are going to require employees to be in the office 3 days a week. We're going to still kind of get some information about which 3 days. Here's why. It's not trust. It's not that we don't want you to feel like you have flexibility. What we really have noticed is you don't know what you're missing by not being surrounded by colleagues who you might learn from. We want to give you the best of both worlds. We want to be able to allow you to have some of that. And it can't be that we all randomly show up at different times. That's why it's gonna be a little bit more intentional. But we're also going, we're just letting you know it's actually so we know you won't be with us forever. We want you to have more skills, whether you're here or you move on. And it would be remiss if we didn't make sure we were doing the best job. To me, that was such a good way to communicate that, especially thinking of the millennial and the Gen Z generations that maybe they were trying to focus on. So that one aside, I would tell you what I've noticed more recently is we've got our clients kind of figuring out and the businesses we talk to kind of figuring out, like for us, it's we need you in the office at least so many days. You need to be pretty specific or we're totally flexible or we're all in. This is it. Knowing that the chips will fall where they may, right? There's some people who do not want to work remote, so they'll find those places. And there's some that are like, that's a deal breaker, I'm out. And that's okay if you decide what it is. What I've found that has been the most successful is when we do speak to the client and say, "What, based on what you've decided, now you just have to be very intentional about your communication styles among your teams." So if you have people who are remote, maybe now it allowed you to bring people in from other states that have great talent. They don't physically need to be with you all the time. But we looked at their communication style and they tend to be one of those talk it out people. They really like to have those touch points with their manager, with their peers. Don't leave them out, right? You've got to be intentional now if you're going to be remote about saying, these are the days that maybe we have our one-on-ones or, hey, we're going to have a brainstorming session. Give them that opportunity. By the same token, you got the people who are in the office because maybe that's just a better workspace for them. Maybe they have young kids or something else going on at home. So they like to be in the office. But they do not like interruptions. They do not prefer the stream of consciousness. Just come up and start talking to me because I'm here. You got to heed them too. Because if you do not use the information that you can get about your people and what they prefer to help engage them and get the best out of them, you can actually disengage people in the office or remote, even if what they initially wanted is what they have. So that's why we go deeper to make sure that whatever you do, you know what to do with that arrangement, be it at flex, hybrid, whatever. And that has made a huge difference because they got that little light bulb that goes, oh, okay. Now I know why every time I walk up to that person's desk, they look at me like, what do you want now? Because this person does not like the unannounced, I need to talk to you right this minute and I'm giving you no time to process.
Okay. I like that. And just for the audience, no, that's me. I'm the person who doesn't like, I get into a stream of consciousness in the work that I'm doing, and to have an unscheduled interruption is disruptive to me. But Shauna is a more stream of consciousness and we find the balance there. There are times where I need to close my door and that's my signal that can't happen. And there are times where I leave my door open and I just stop what I'm doing because I know that's a process she has to go through. So in terms of the work we do, we eat our own cooking. We use our own science, to make sure we understand that. So you brought up something really interesting as we talk about the world of work, and I'm starting to make a unique correlation between, as we talk about management and leadership in this new remote hybrid in-office environment, are you finding that many companies need to use services like ours to retrain managers and leaders on how to manage in this environment? Because there was no rule book for how to manage remote employees. Most people were used to watching the clock when you walk in to determine punctuality, or, you know, checking in with you four times a day to see how you were doing on that project. And now with much more of this work shifting to results-based, where you don't know if somebody started work at 6 a.m, 8 a.m, or 5 p.m. You just know that the work got done. So now you can't attribute their workflow to their time at a desk. Are you finding that more companies are in need of that training? What's the value and benefit of that training?
Yes. And originally you used the term retraining, and I would tell you that that's probably the only flaw is that some of them were never trained. Mm-hmm. And I know when I was in the workforce, in the corporate world for those 20 years, more often than not, I was answering to somebody or became a manager and I got no formal training, right? Like there was just, hopefully you were just empathetic enough and had enough, I guess, knew what you didn't want because you'd experienced it, that you'd try to be a better leader based on that. So the answer to your question was yes, absolutely. It has been very valuable. And I think, I mean, we know from, at least I know back when I was even in the corporate workforce, when the millennials were coming into the workforce, everybody was just like, oh no, you know, they're just bringing in a whole different, you know, mentality, and they're demanding this, they're demanding that. And I even remember back then thinking, well, yeah, but that was like the first generation where we said, you must have a college degree to even come in at our entry level to do our files. Like, I mean, that was just a different world. So I really understood that. But where I like how that shifted is even today, it's making it so if leaders, I guess, in the past, or if executives didn't necessarily see the value in training, so they just didn't invest in it. It just didn't happen. But now they're realizing that we've got to do something different because our attrition rate is, you know, as we know, it's skyrocketing, or just, I guess, turnover in general. And they're realizing they can't ignore the things because the demand is coming from the workforce. We demand feeling a certain kind of way. And one thing that I didn't mention, but it's my favorite visual that we ever use, is we talk about, you mentioned how when people come on board, the employer's excited. They think they picked the right person, and the person's excited, right? The applicant is like, this is awesome. They're talking about what future opportunities might be. So we got them on the, we call it the I want to curve. So it's going straight up. If you imagine, right, everyone's excited. And then over time, we can find those same employees being on what we call the have to line. So that's like right, just enough not to lose their job, right? Like the quiet quitting, whatever you want to call it. They get to that place where they're so disengaged, but they're not necessarily leaving, unfortunately, because sometimes they're more costly to you that way. But we always think, what takes people from that excited place to the I have to the I have to, I'm barely going to do enough. And it's the four forces, right? So it is having a good job fit, which is why we make sure, I mean, people who are in a job for a long time and then the pandemic shifted everything because workforce, you know, attrition, all that stuff, they might be in a job now that they were actually never really a good fit for, but it was the shift that happened, right? So that can cause disengagement. Manager, if my manager, you know, you've heard the term, people leave, yeah, they leave managers, they don't leave jobs. And that is true sometimes, right? So managers have a lot on their shoulders to not disengage the people they're supposed to be leading. Then there's team, right? That's why we focus so much on teams now. When teams come together, when you add one person, take one away, the whole team dynamic changes. I mean, we've seen that truly between the time I'm going to visit a team and who was on their team by the time I get there, their entire team has actually shifted in terms of what kind of the style is as a group. That can cause disengagement. And then of course, culture. Does the culture align with the people that are being brought into it? Are they feeling like they're connected to it? And it's their why, as you brought up in the beginning. The cool thing is those all can be reasons for disengagement to happen, but they can also be how, if you're intentional, engagement gets put back into place where we actually see that trajectory goes back up. It's mining each one of those areas. So to your point, those are the things that we're finding that if our employers invest in those pieces, wherever it's broken, like, you know, we don't come in and say, here's what we do and here's the order it goes in. You diagnose, right? You say like, what's going on? And sometimes we've come in and it's team-based to start with because that's the bright fire. And then it kind of gets that like, okay, that was good. How do we now take this? And like you said, it's got to be top down for it to probably really permeate because as we know, even if my team gets fixed, if the team we're working with across the hall never got into this, they're still doing things the way it was, it might fall flat. So I do believe in what you said, which is the training's important, but we do need that executive buy-in, because it's the way it is, whether you're doing a wellness program or anything else. If the leaders don't emulate it and they don't show that they're supporting it, a lot of times even our HR executives that we'll be working with, if they feel like they're going to get pushback on anything, everybody just limits their beliefs of what can be done, and we just don't get the full impact that could happen.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you bring up a good point. I'm going to touch on a few of those points, but, you know, as we talk about the importance of teams, organizations that have teams, the importance of showing that team how to work best together. One of the things I've seen in the clients we work with, and I've seen this throughout my career, is often inside of companies, someone takes pride in being the highest scorer on a losing team. Mm-hmm. And I just think that is the biggest disservice that individual is doing to themselves and to their organization. Because often passing the ball, or whatever analogy you want to use, might allow you to score enough points to actually win the game. But as we talk about management, leadership, and how they move forward in this space, I want you to touch on a moment about, not just do we help them learn how to manage better, but how to manage who they manage better. A good manager doesn't manage everyone on the team the same way, because everyone on the team doesn't show up the same way. So maybe touch on a little bit about some of the tools and how you specifically work with those managers to get the best out of every team member voluntarily. Because, of course, what we're after is a good indicator of for us is when an employee is giving discretionary effort.
Right.
Doing the work that's not part of their description necessarily, or coming in early, staying late, being committed to the outcome more so than a job responsibility.
Absolutely. And so I would say that it a lot of times we're finding recently what the most success has been, maybe it comes off of us doing that team meeting. So there's just something in the manager getting to see, not only learn about each individual, but get to hear them talk about each other. We actually had one of our clients recently where their largest team was like 25 people. And we already had this on the calendar, and they had just hired a brand new manager for this. And several people, because they're kind of out in the field, so to speak, had never met him yet. And so when he came in, he actually got to learn about everyone, was taking notes, and they got to learn about him. But like you said, with this third party being us, and this tool that basically is telling you, hey, based on the answers we got from you in this quick thing, we're able to tell you kind of how you like to communicate. What are some things about what drives you, even if that's not what you're always going to do? Because we tend to, as adults and professionals, we meet the work where it's at, right? Which means we're going to flex. But in doing that, what was interesting is he got to get like kind of a head start of just seeing, wow. I mean, number one, no one knew him, but yet I said, hey, you know, you're new here. Does that sound like you? He's like, absolutely. He's like, so now we just gave them an indication. Now he got to learn about each person. Like I said, they get to hear about what each person notices about the people that we're coming out in. Now let's fast forward to kind of answer your question. When I'm now meeting with him and we're talking about what's going on, how he's going to approach things. You talked earlier about a little bit about that. This is how we've always done it. There's always a part of that, especially when you come into a new team that's already there. What's exciting is he gets to take his experience. He gets to know what the leadership says they're trying to accomplish, which is why they brought him on board. And he gets to take each individual person. And we actually just went through their leaders training, where they got to learn about what all of the insights that we get from the tool we use, what they mean, how you can discern them, and really what you should just gather even from the highest perspective. And you could just watch the light bulb go off. And he was just so excited to be like, oh my gosh, this is great. I know what I'm going to do with this person. Those aha moments in there, when you have managers go, oh man, I had one time where she actually said, you know, now that I understand, when this person comes to me and asks me questions, wants clarification, I used to think when they did that, they really were just not feeling super secure. So I tended to give them kind of a pep talk, like, you've got this, you know, I know you're fine. Don't doubt yourself. Because now that I'm looking at their profile, they really just wanted clarification. Like I could put the pom-poms away. That was not what they were looking for. They were looking for actual details and information that would give them the confidence to move forward. And they're just a little different than my natural style. This is what she was saying, which is why it was like that, oh my goodness, now I'm going to approach this totally differently. So it was very frustrating for those two people prior to that because they both were intending the right way, right? Like the manager wanted to do the right thing. She was misinterpreting the behavior. She didn't understand what the drive was behind the behavior. That's what we help managers get is, do you understand what drives this person? So even though you're seeing them behave this way, you're guessing. What if we helped you to where it wasn't a guess? So to your point, I'm not trying to force this style on this person when it doesn't work at all with this person and it's actually demotivating rather than getting them excited.
What I like about the example you gave is it really shows what's at the core of the work we do, which is even the scenario you gave, it wasn't just that person in a management role understanding and having awareness of their team member. It was the self-awareness. It was the, this is how I process, and I was projecting how I process onto someone else,
right,
and then treating them based on their response to my projection.
Exactly.
Versus, I know who I am, I know how I approach things, but this is how this person communicates. If I can communicate with them in their language, mm-hmm. we actually both come out of it feeling so much better. So you told the story of the new person in a leadership role who was brought in and quickly assimilated to the team. The team, because they'd gone through our process already, knew how to receive the information they got about this new person. And right. this new person immediately was able to connect with the staff in terms of who they were as individuals. How long had this person been with the company when this happened?
Less than a week.
Right. That's what I want our audience to understand in terms of what yeah. we do. Yeah, if you've ever worked for a company and you got a new manager, how long did it take you to actually get a feel for who that manager is and have that manager get a feel for who you really are, right? Because you didn't want to be judged on whether or not you showed up 5 minutes late or something else. How long? We're able to do in a week what sometimes isn't being done in a year or more. So just wanted to share that there. We're right at about time. I'm going to do one thing because we're going to add it to the show. So I'm going to have Shauna spin, we call it the Wheel of Favorites. So she's going to spin the Wheel of Favorites and then she's going to tell us whatever comes into that category.
Okay. Am I just clicking this?
Yep, center button. Okay, your favorite hobby or pastime. What is your favorite hobby or pastime?
Oh my gosh. Well, at this point, I'd have to say golf, right? I mean, that's what we do. And it's the most beautiful thing you can do. I think the reason I did it in the beginning was for the beautiful weather. And now I do it because of the company, which is you. And obviously the fact that it just keeps us active. That's my favorite.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes, we are fanatic golfers who try to get out 3 to 4 times a week. Shauna, thank you so much. I really don't think I could have picked a better guest for the first one. I'm sure I'll have you on again. And remember, it's Read Between the Lines. So you might even find that sometimes Shauna is your host. But thanks again. This has been great and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thank you.